The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yeah!
And tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have at PCN_Dirt on Twitter.
Hi, everybody.
And not with us tonight, but always a part of our group, is at Roddy Cat on Twitter. So make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account for Comic Book Chronicles, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. As to your circles on Google+, just go to google.com/+TheClickNation. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. And if you want to subscribe just to the Comic Book Chronicles feed, the short URL for that is bit.ly/CBCronPod. We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us and check us out there, along with all the other podcasts on the network. You can buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise from the CSPN. Just go to their Redbubble website page, redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron on your favorite social media websites when discussing comic books. We'll make sure to shout you out during the show if we see those social media shares. And remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Alrighty. Oh, and also make sure to go to PCN Dirt's website, popculturenetwork.com.
Woohoo!
So let's get to the cinematic news of the week. Of course, cinematic including film and television. First up, we have a report of Gladiator actress cast as Wonder Woman's Hippolyta.
Yeah.
And that actress is Connie Nielsen. During the DC week on the CW, we got the 30-minute Justice League preview / Batman v Superman preview, where we saw our first look at some footage from the Wonder Woman feature film.
Right.
Okay, so it was DC Films Dawn of Justice, of the Justice League was the name of the special.
I have that and the Captain America 75th thing saved, but I haven't watched either one.
Yeah, they both were good.
I was sticking to the Cap one, but I definitely was flipping to see what they were showing of the upcoming movies.
Yeah.
The Captain America one, by the way, if you missed it, ABC is nice enough to put it on their YouTube channel. It'll only cost you $1.99 to rent it.
Oof.
If you would like to do that.
Oof.
So, yeah, I noticed that it wasn't available on any of their, on demand or anything like that. So I looked on YouTube, and sure enough, you can pay $1.99 for the honor of watching it online.
Oof. So it's not on their app. It's not on demand. Wow.
Unless they added it today. I don't know. But
possibly.
And I believe the DC Films Dawn of the Justice League is on one of the WB or whoever's YouTube accounts also. Hmm. At least I remember seeing someone mention that it was. Supergirl producers tease Bizarro, Indigo, and For the Girl Who Has Everything. Mm-hmm. During the DC Films Dawn of the Justice League, they premiered a new trailer for Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
With it was pretty good. Rhapsody playing in the background.
Yeah, I liked that part. I thought that was pretty cool. I don't know what kind of expectations I had going into this, but I can at least appreciate that they orchestrated a nice trailer and had a cool music playing alongside, so that was a good touch.
The Green Lantern Corps were mentioned during the tease for the Justice League film. So instead Dirt, of just having
Dirt, I'm presuming that you heard a lot of this stuff after the show aired, right?
But from the DC special?
Yeah, like a lot.
The headlines pop up in the feed from Bleeding Cool, but I didn't really go into depth on any of them since I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, all right. So I guess I'll ring the spoiler bell for you.
Oh, I'm not worried about it. It's okay.
Okay.
But it's not much of a spoil, just that the Green Lantern Corps would be involved in the Justice League film.
They had already announced that.
Yeah.
I mean, the concept art had already come out for it. So.
Well, I think they had at least said that it would be a Green Lantern Corps movie, but I don't think they had talked about how that would involve in the Justice League film, at least not officially. So Jonah Hex will be appearing in this season's Legends of Tomorrow, which of course just went off the air before we started recording.
Anyone watch it?
Yeah.
I watched it.
It was all right.
I love it.
It was one of those things where I got done watching it and I was just like, eh.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
They had to explain a lot of stuff. And
because of the time travel?
Yeah, well, and because of all these different characters.
Hmm.
And so there was just a lot of... I just didn't feel like I really connected with any of the characters in the show. So when I got done with the show, there's really nothing I was looking forward to seeing next week. Like there was no great cliffhanger. There was no, you know, bold secret unveiled. There was nothing that really
to look forward to.
Yeah, it was just it was there. It happened. It's over now, and that's all I really have to say.
Wow,
I'm surprised you tuned in for the premiere.
My son wanted to see it because they played a promo for it. We went and saw Star Wars again in 3D, and they played a promo for it before Star Wars.
Nice.
Okay. Let's see. Jessica Jones was renewed for a second season. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, right.
Image Comics' Sets Castle film will be adapted by the Russo brothers.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, this is the first I've heard about it. 20th Century Fox has picked up the right to the graphic novel Sets Castle from Image Comics. The property was created by Kyle Starks, and the studio has brought on Captain America Civil War directors Joe and Anthony Russo to produce. Right? Have anyone here read Sets Castle?
Nay.
Same here.
No.
I didn't even know what title you were referring to. I was like, are you sure you're not talking about sex criminals?
So in news that excited me this week, there's going to be an animated Justice League versus Teen Titans animated film later this year.
No kidding.
And you can see the feature for it on the Batman Bad Blood, which is out digitally now, but on Blu-ray, DVD, February 2nd, so not next week, 2 weeks.
Okay.
So it deals with the Justice League sends Damian off to the Teen Titans after he botches a mission, and Trigon?
Yeah, Trigon.
Yeah, Trigon possesses the Justice League, and the Titans have to stop them and Trigon, of course. Yeah. So I'm going off my memory, but because I don't want to click the link, but the Teen Titans team is Nightwing, Beast Boy, they had Cyborg up there, Starfire. Damian, and
Blue Beetle.
Yeah, Blue Beetle, and who's Trigon's daughter?
Raven. Yep.
What about me? What about Raven? Sorry. I can't believe I dropped the wrestling reference in
there. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. You know, we got it. Spider-Man and the Avengers return to Disney XD in new seasons of animated adventures. And I saw this news earlier this week, and I forgot to post it on my site, so I need to make sure to do that. But the next season of Spider-Man is going to be called Marvel's Ultimate Spider-Man versus the Sinister Six, where... At least in the press release I read, he's going to be teaming up with Venom, Miles Morales, Iron Spider, and Scarlet Spider are helping him. So I'm wondering, like, what happens to Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Nova and the rest of them? I wonder if they're going to still be on the show.
Well, they might jump onto the Avengers show because aren't they supposed to be, like, Avengers in training? Like, they were in Avengers Academy on the show?
Yeah, I guess that was part of the last season. They were doing the whole training to be superheroes. Maybe they graduated. I didn't see the finale, so.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not up on the show. I just know that they were based out of the Triskelion, I think now.
Oh, I thought they were on the helicarrier.
I think they had moved from there and started to be based from the Triskelion, and they were using that as a base. So I could be wrong, but anyone out there listening or watching, let us know on Twitter.
Okay. And next season of Avengers is Marvel's Avengers Ultron Revolution.
We're going to be Ultron something.
Where we get to see guest appearances by Black Panther, Captain Marvel, I think Miss Marvel, the Inhumans, and much more. So the Avengers world is growing.
Mm-hmm. Like a weed.
The Sony Marvel Spider-Man film is moved up in its release date, while Star Wars Episode 7 shifts to December 2017. So the Spider-Man movie is moved up to July 28, 2017. Wait,
no.
Oh, it's moved from July 28, 2017 to July 7th.
Yep.
And Star Wars moves back to December 15th. As I tweeted that afternoon when the news was coming out of all these movies changing gears, we're talking about movies that are 2 years from now. The only thing I care about is the stuff coming out this year. I care less about next year's movies.
I don't even care about movies that are like more than a couple months away. Like I was watching something and it was like, this March 25th. And I'm just like, it's too far. Come back to me later.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
I was about to say, it's surprising that Deadpool is right, is coming up very quickly.
Yeah, that's the only thing I'm concentrating on right now is Deadpool. I got a short attention span. Got to keep my vision center. Oh, and also Terminator, whatever the last Terminator sequel got taken off of whatever studio has it scheduled.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing because I actually watched Genesis the other day and it's not that bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I think a lot of people didn't like it because it did what a time travel movie is supposed to do, where they changed time and they changed history, and so now everything is all weird. And
it's not the same.
It's a Back to the Future 2 of Terminator movies, I guess is a good way to put it, which a lot of people didn't like. But, I enjoyed it. I thought the action especially was really well done.
Stephen Amell teases Vitson's debut on Arrow with the new photo. And then today we actually got a image of the actress Megalyn, I'm going to butcher her last name, Ichikonwaki.
Oh, Lord. Hold on, let me look at this, because I saw that earlier.
So we get to see her in costume, and we'll see her later this season. Charlie Cott says Marvel might recast Daredevil for Infinity War.
That's disappointing to hear.
I don't believe that.
I know. Well, you know what? It's always tough to hear from the actual actor who's playing the role on TV right now, because you saw what they did to The Flash, so.
Okay.
Ichikonwaki. Wow, that's really tough.
My whole thing is like, why even? I believe that they just wouldn't even include Daredevil rather than recast him. Everything's supposed to be connected. Marvel's thing is connectivity. DC is the one that don't care about having the TV and movies line up, so that's. I smell false information.
But it can also be an issue of timing. Like, in order for the movie to be put together the way they need it to be put together in the time frame they need, they may not be able to use him.
Right.
Because he may have some other stuff going on, even stuff with, the show. So therefore, they may just say, we got to choose someone else for the movie, and that's just the way it's going to have to go.
Definitely a possibility.
I just think they wouldn't include him, period, because they'd have to introduce him to the movie public beforehand, right? At least you'd imagine.
No, because I think they would just assume that
you've been watching Netflix, enough,
yeah, have Netflix and have seen the show.
Okay. Mike Coulter teases Claire Temple's large storyline in Luke Cage. The Netflix log lines confirm Marvel team-up in Defenders series, of course. Luke Skywalker's blaster from the Empire Strike Back goes on sale for $300,000.
Roddy bid on it, I'm sure.
Nah, he makes that money.
And, of course, we mentioned that the Captain America 75th anniversary special happened Tuesday night. The big news out of that was, for people concerned with the comics, Steve Rogers will be returning to the red, white, and blue and donning the Captain America outfit again, along with his own ongoing series.
Welcome back, Steve.
But apparently, Sam Wilson is still going to continue his series as Captain America.
Right.
So there's going to be two captains.
Correct.
Fighting different battles.
Right. And Sam Wilson's going to retain the original shield.
Yes. I just hope U.S. Patriot shows up. What's his name? U.S. Agent. That's his name.
Yeah, U.S. Agent.
You're Super Patriot.
Exactly. You're confusing him and his former identity. It's just a shame that I was going to say it's a shame.
I'm fine that.
It's a shame that that they have to use this kind of wonky or like this weird triangle design shield for Steve Rogers. I'm kind of disappointed by that. Just give him I guess they just want to change him up a little bit, whatnot. But they give him another uniform, that doesn't even harken back to the Marvel Now uniform, which is so awesome. Because it melded so much of the real world into the uniform. You know, it gave him like this like pseudo body armor look. You know, it was like a light body armor, and it just looked really cool, looked really militaristic, and I'm disappointed that they went away from that.
It had a gun. You can't do that.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, when Bucky was the Captain America?
I'm not talking about Bucky. I'm talking about the Marvel Now.
I don't remember which was the Marvel. You said the body armor, so I was thinking of the one Bucky had.
This one. Remember during Infinity? I'm gonna turn around the Jim Chung art. This one.
Oh, okay. The one that looked more like the Ultimates.
Yeah. It was definitely a lot more like the Ultimates, but it still had a lot of elements of the original. I just like the overall look and the style of it. So
you don't like this throwback to Heroes Reborn?
It's been he's already worn that enough in the movies. It's time to get him a different one,
I guess.
You know.
Well, I mean, here, look. This is the biggest consideration you got to keep in mind is the fact that they can sell new T-shirts and new posters and new action figures,
right?
And new Halloween costumes and new cake toppers and new party hats and new accessories. They can sell kids new plastic shields with a little electro blade at the bottom. And I mean, there's a lot that rides on a redesign.
And is that a redesign for Bucky's outfit in the background, or is he just so far away you can't really tell what he's got on?
It looks like he's wearing sweatpants and a
black top
and a black Under Armour shirt. I think that's all he's wearing.
You will protect this house.
Ah!
Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for listeners of Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us at cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skull Candy Audio through cspn.us. Do it today! All right, so now to the comic book news of the week. We had the April 2016 solicits come out. So lots of news from all your favorite comic book companies. And of course, in those solicits, we see DC is bringing back Bloodlines in April of 2016.
Hey, Hitman did come out of Bloodlines, so you can't say it was all bad.
It was 99.99% bad.
Hey, it's no Heroes Reborn.
Oh! We gotta bring that up again. That's two Heroes Reborn references.
Throw that in as many times as I can.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Bloodlines I know nothing about, so I'll just check that out when it's made available.
Well, and the thing is, it's called Bloodlines, but there's no like actual, no stated connection between the other one, really, other than the fact that it's in the DC universe, and there might be some small, token of a storyline that still connects it, but this is not looking. This is described as a dark and horrifying science fiction epic, which is a little different from Alien Bites Some Kid and the Kid Gets Superpowers, which was the old one.
Right. I just remember seeing stacks and stacks of Bloodlines annuals standing in the comic shop.
Bins.
Yes. Yeah.
I was going to say, wasn't Bloodline a Robert Liefeld creation?
Oh, no. You're
no, you think of Blood Wolf.
That. I was about blood to say, you're confusing that with all the other things
Strike.
Yeah, that he named with blood.
Mm. A-Force is getting a new creative team from writer Kelly Thompson and artist Ben Caldwell. And I should point this out. I'm going to point this out because I mentioned it when the news broke. Again, another example of Marvel stealing away talent from DC. Just like Jesus Saez doing the Avengers standoff book and will be the artist on the Captain America Steve Rogers book. Ben Caldwell did the art for Prez, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, and some other DC stuff. I think he did some stuff during Convergence. So that's another steal from Marvel. Harley Quinn and Gang of Harleys coming in April. Jim Lee's going to illustrate Harley Quinn and Suicide Squad April Fool's special. I wonder.
So he's got plenty of lead time for that, maybe?
It's file is just like 12 pages.
Like I said, I got plenty of lead time for that.
And the one-shot will be written by Martian Manhunter and Unfollow scribe Rob Williams, and have additional art from Sean Cheeks Galloway. The Black Comic Book Festival drew 5,000 people in Harlem, held at the Schomburg Center. So congrats to everyone involved with that venture.
Very cool.
Is Marvel teasing the return of the Thunderbolts?
Yes, they are.
Certainly seems that way. To which I said, eh. My question is, where do they fit in this all different Marvel universe? We've got if they're good guys and there's no like Swerve and they're really bad guys like before. I mean, we have multiple Avengers teams, so that'd be kind of redundant with that. If they're villains, they're kind of similar to the Squadron Supreme, and if they're just straight villains, like there's the Illuminati book. So, what's going to be the hook is what I wonder.
You're going to pay.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, go ahead. You go ahead first, sir.
I was just going to say you're going to have to pay probably $4.99 for that first issue just to find out what the deal is. Like all they're going to tell you in advance is like, oh, it's a big team. This is it'll be part of the Marvel Universe.
It'll be on the last page, like I guess the original Thunderbolts book.
All I was going to say is that the original Thunderbolts was released when there were a lot fewer books on the stand, and we're right in the middle of multiple launches and relaunches at Marvel. There's just so much product on the stands right now that a book like this, like you said, without a hook, is not going to gain much traction. So, you know, in my opinion, I know I tweeted something out about this, you know, during the week, earlier in the week. There's just way too much stuff out right now for anyone to really expect to, it's just a lot of, I don't want to say mediocre stuff because I think it's better than that, but there's just too much. There's a glut.
Well, I think for me, the biggest problem is there's too much that comes across as the same. You've got all new Inhumans, you've got uncanny Inhumans, you've got all new, all different Avengers, you've got new Avengers, which we've dealt with that before, but then you've got
A-Force,
yeah.
Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah. Mm. You know, all these books that when someone walks in off the street and they're like, oh, well, you know, I was thinking about getting into this. I saw something in whatever magazine about this. Which one should I get? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, buddy, you're on your own. Like, this is, you know, open seas. I have no idea because there's so many things and you just get this feeling like one of them's going to last 12 issues and disappear for a while and reboot again. And one of them may get up to about 30 issues and then it's going to reboot. And one of them's going to go about maybe 15 issues and get an all new creative team and be completely different. And one of them's going to get canceled. And, you know, I just look at all this stuff and I'm like, nothing within the Marvel line of books stands out as like, this is something that you must read. This is the important part of the Marvel Universe right now.
One thing I can point to and say is Invincible Iron Man.
Just for the awesome facial hair, bros.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a second Iron Man book out soon, too. So, like I said, there's just a glut of product out there.
Aftershock Comics titles will now be on Comixology and Kindle Store. So you'll be able to get those digitally. Congrats to them. I might, there's a book that came out this week that I may try out.
American Monster?
Yeah, that one. Have you seen it or read it?
Oh, yeah. We ordered enough to get the variant on that one because we think that one might have some legs to it.
Cool.
Xena Warrior Princess returns to comics with Genevieve Valentine and Ariel Metal at Dynamite Comics.
Cool.
Odd.
And Mike Mignola's next big book at IDW is the, I think it's the Artist Edition.
So it's one of those oversized collector's hardcover books with behind-the-scenes artwork and extra bonus stories and stuff, yeah.
How do those sell at your store, Dirt, or do you have to special order them for people?
It depends. Every once in a while, we'll order a couple for the shelf. If it's something like Simonson's Thor is one of those safe ones that you know someone's going to come in and pick up eventually at some point. On one like this, I'll probably order one for myself, but as far as for the store, it's like someone's going to have to ask for one of these if they want one. They're just so expensive that it's really hard it's hard to justify having the whole collection on the shelf.
Yep. Hmm. Although they are pretty, I only have one, and it's the Simonson Thor one. So I really dig it. I break it out every once in a while just to look at it. But I can't imagine. You know, I look at there's a couple of bigger comic book stores in New York that have just a bunch of them arrayed for display for sale, and it's just it's kind of it's staggering to try to figure out, well, that's the one I want next, right? I have to carry it home.
I like how you keep yours in the box to keep it safe.
Yes, because it's awesome. Although I'm contemplating lugging this with me the next time I go to a con. Hopefully I can get Walt to sign it.
No, I don't sign those.
All right.
I'm about to say, paying all that money, you better be signing it.
Listen, he signed the Alien one. He did an Alien book, like the movie tie-in comic or whatever. And I saw him signing that. So anyway, let's see, where are we now?
We're on to the ad read for the
nice.
And let me choose which one I want to do next. We're gonna go with Audible.com. Let's see. For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can choose from such books as The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, Black Superhero, The King of New Orleans, How the Junkyard Dog Became Professional Wrestling's First Black Superhero by Greg Klein, Wrestling for My Life, The Legend, The Reality, and The Faith of a WWE Superstar by Shawn Michaels, and much more. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook. This is where...
That's it.
Yay! All right, time to do some reviewing.
All right.
Yeah, you read a lot.
I did. Like I said, I had some time on the subway to catch up on some of my reading, although I regret not catching up enough to read the Poison Ivy book that was out this week. I just wanted to mention I did meet Amy Chu, the writer of this week's the first issue of the new Poison Ivy miniseries, and she's very cool. She's freelance, written a number of things before. She's been on panels at various cons. But this is my first time actually meeting her up close and personal, and she's really cool. So I just wanted to give her a shout-out and a plug. Take a look at this. It's gotten some good reviews, although we'll see how our panel picks it apart.
So PC and Dirt and myself did read it, right?
Yes, sir.
So we can quickly go through it. Pamela Isley is working at the Gotham City Botanical Gardens, working with the plants, and she sees this as getting sort of a fresh start, doing what she loves, interacting with the plants. We have a guest appearance from one of her best friends, Harley Quinn. And I'm trying to remember, there was a surprise, or at least sort of like a cliffhanger ending, wasn't there?
Yeah, something bad happens to someone in the
in the lab.
Botanical gardens, yeah, in the lab, and we don't know what happened. Dun, dun, dun.
Also a cameo from the Gotham Academy kids, even though I don't think they was actually the main cast of Gotham Academy. It just looked like random kids to me, at least from what I could tell.
Let me take a look.
I
did see that panel. Let me see if I can flip to it.
I think it was supposed to be Maps and...
They didn't look like him to me.
The cool kid.
Oh, yeah. It is Maps. And, yeah, and her brother.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's Olive, too. Olive Silver in the back with the silver hair.
Mm. So maybe it's me with the bad eyes.
We're just used to seeing a different art style portraying these kids.
Yeah, much more cartoony style.
Right.
You make them a little more normal looking than that's how they get. I don't know. I thought the book was fine. I expected it to really be awful, I guess. And it was not terrible. It was something that, generally those books, whenever it's a Gotham villain and they're in like a 6-issue miniseries, it's really, they're generally very flat. There's a heist, it goes wrong, they have to hide out, they're fighting someone else, the hero appears, fights off the bad guy's enemies, and then tries to take in the bad guy, but the bad guy gets away, and that's the end of your 6 issues. That's generally how, those miniseries turn out. So the fact that this one was so completely different, at least, I thought was more interesting. And the artwork is fantastic. I think it looks really nice throughout.
It's Clay Man, right?
I
believe so.
Yes.
And the colors looked really nice. The colors had a nice painted watercolor look to it.
Oh, and...
from Ulysses Arriola. Mm-hmm.
Reference, Clayman's twin brother does his inking on it.
Yeah. Twin brother, really?
Heard that on the DC Comics Periscope today.
Nice. I did not know that.
So it wasn't like, it's not going to be like my click of the week. It's nowhere close to anything like that. But it was better than I expected it to be. It was not terrible. It was not awful. It was not bad.
Okay.
But I'm still a little skeptical. I want to see where it goes before I decide that it's something worth reading and collecting or whatever. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. All right, what do you guys read here?
What do you want to go to next?
Do you want to go to Star Wars?
Sure.
I thought the Star Wars book this week was pretty interesting. It's one of these kind of interlude stories that delves into the diary, the journal of Obi-Wan Kenobi, and tells some of the stories of what Obi-Wan was doing on Tatooine while Luke was growing up. I thought this was a great little call. You know, they had a lot of great callbacks in the story to some of the things that they talk about, what's the canyon called? Beggar's Canyon. You know, you hear them reference that a couple of times.
Shooting swamp rats back in Beggar's Canyon.
No, they were womp rats, not swamp rats.
Yeah, womp rats. That's what I meant
to say. Oh, no!
What, there are no swamps in the desert? What?
Two demerits to PCN underscore dirt for that one.
To Slytherin House. That's where I'm at.
50 points. I thought the highlight of the book was the art. The art was drop-dead gorgeous by Mike Mayhew. Mike Mayhew, I think, did the coloring on this also, or the painting. It's just, it's remarkable stuff. That was, I think, the strongest point of the book. It's definitely interesting to see where, to see what Obi-Wan was really up to during this time. But at the end of the day, we sort of know that he does make it through this. You know, it's sort of the same story with a lot of these Star Wars books. But ultimately, it's an interesting enough story. It is an interlude. We're back to the regular storyline next issue. But for a one and done kind of issue, it's pretty interesting. Like I said, the highlight of the book is definitely the art. Oh, and Uncle Owen is a pain in the neck.
Hey, Uncle Owen was right. Because once Luke gets messed up in all this stuff, then Uncle Owen's dead. So he was right to try to keep him out as long as possible.
He said nothing but trouble follows Obi-Wan Kenobi around.
Right.
And he was right. He was absolutely right.
So that's too busy hanging out with Skywalkers. That's the problem.
But, I agree with the criticism that, we know how all this ends up, and we kind of felt like when we read the last interlude piece from his journal with the huts and the getting them out of the debt and that storyline, like I felt like we already had these same story beats. So we didn't really get any new story beats out of it except for maybe reaffirming that he's such a good pilot because, his dad was such a great pilot as a kid, so he's picked up that trait. And it's like, oh, yeah, I kind of forgot about, that thing happening. But, I mean, at the same time, though, that's all I really got out of the book was just a reiteration of a story point that, I mean, technically we've known for 20 years.
Right.
All right. Captain Marvel number one.
This is pretty good. I actually picked up the hip-hop variant.
I went looking for it at Second and Charles tonight and did not see it. I enjoyed the book also. You can tell Chris Anka's art is getting better from when he first started. Everything seems just a little bit more polished as far as...
It's a little sharper, right?
Yeah, a lot sharper. Matt Wilson, one of my favorite colorists, colored it. He does work on Daredevil, which I think he'll come back when that... he did Daredevil, and he'll be on a Black Widow book when it relaunches. And also he does The Mighty Thor. So basically the premise is Captain Marvel is invited to head up the new Alpha Flight program where she'll be up in space for 2 years.
Right. It's basically the replacement for S.W.O.R.D.
The first line of defense against planetary threats, which of course they get one, the first issue.
Of course.
The Alpha Flight members are Puck, Sasquatch, and Aurora. And there's a scientist that named Wendy that was part of the previous volume of Captain Marvel shows up here.
Right.
Oh, and also War Machine, who, if you don't read Captain Marvel, you have no idea that her and Rhodey are dating because it's never referenced anywhere else.
Except for the Captain Marvel book.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it. So I think the two writers that are showrunners on Agent Carter did a good job of getting in Carol Danvers' head.
Right, and getting off to a good start.
I like how everyone was like questioning if Carol would do a good job leading Alpha Flight just because, would she really want this all this responsibility?
Well, I think
that would be a desk job and not.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I think you hit the nail right on the head. Is she an administrator or is she like a front lines action junkie type adventurer? And we find out in this that you know, she has very little tolerance for the boredom of the boardroom and executive decisions. And she's definitely, you know, on the front lines dealing with whatever threats might be approaching Earth from space. So, you know, I don't think we're going to see – we're probably going to see more instances where Carol has to, you know, make some of the more mundane decisions on board this the Alpha Flight space station. But ultimately, we're going to see a lot more action. I thought that one of the things I thought was cool was that it seems like they've – sort of upped her power level a little bit. Did you guys notice that? Did you sense that at all? Like with her like chucking that meteor or into the sun, like from where they were?
I just figured she was always this.
Oh, yeah. She never struck me as being on that level, but it seems like they're upping her her power levels just a bit, or at least in this version of Captain Marvel. I don't know if they're going to touch on whether or not she can still tap into the binary powers, you know, when she gets like, you know, when she can channel like a star. But, you know, right now it seems like they've got her maybe not on like Hyperion, like, you know, pseudo Superman levels, but they've definitely got her pumped up a little bit.
So that's Captain Marvel number one. How was Martian Manhunter PC in dirt?
It's all right.
A lot of all rights tonight.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking earlier that...
That's kind of how I felt over a bunch of books this week, to be honest.
Yeah, this book was kind of low-key overall, I felt. But, I don't know, Martian Manhunter, it's entered into this point where it's gotten so deep into the story it's been telling that it doesn't feel like the entire issue is a whole story anymore. Like, you couldn't jump in and just pick up this issue and follow it. And it doesn't really feel like this particular issue didn't really have a beginning, middle, end. It's just a part of that ongoing saga. There were no real revelations in this. It didn't really seem like anything got resolved or there were any major new problems that arose. The only thing was, at the very end, there's the bad guy has this like little, I don't know, orb spaceship thing, and it turns into a giant robot to crush the city. And then the rebels who are fighting against him, they decide that they're going to fight back, so they have their own giant robot thing. So now you're getting giant robot versus giant robot over the city. You're getting like this Power Rangers face-off. And it's one of those things that, like, I look at this, and I'm like, I don't know if this means the story has jumped the shark or if this is genius. Like, I can't tell, like, if this is going to end up being the greatest thing ever or if this is just, like, the moment where the story just completely falls apart and it'll never recover, you know? So I enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the run on it, but this was not my favorite issue of it. Mm-hmm. And it very well could be where the entire thing just goes downhill and never recovers.
Well, now I'm intrigued.
That'll make Tim read it.
I just sold 200 more copies.
I like that, and I appreciate looking in that left-hand corner and seeing that $2.99 price point.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you pick up the adult coloring book variant, it's still the $2.99 price point, and you get the Scott Collins artwork that you can color in. So
incentive.
There you go. For all you want to be colorists out there.
Yeah, right?
There you go.
All right, cool. Let's see. What did you guys read? Let's jump to Batman 48.
Yay.
What's okay. the matter? What's the matter?
No, I was nothing was the matter on this one. This is a good one.
Yeah, it's a good error.
This is one that's... This is a $3.99 price point, and it's worth the extra dollar.
Yeah, I happen to pick up the adult coloring book variant, so...
I have that as well.
So do I. I'll never color it, but I have it.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't know, I'm just kind of tempted to... maybe not in the Batman book, but one of the other ones.
Wait until the pencils come out next week, and then you get your DC branded coloring pencils to color it in.
Goodness gracious!
I've got like I've got a Green Arrow or Green Lantern from a couple weeks ago. I could try that.
You still can't tell which one it is because it's not colored.
Yeah, I know it was one of them. It was green. Actually, I think it's Green Arrow because I think I remember the bow and arrow being on the cover in his hands. So in Batman, we get the conversation between Bruce Wayne and a character that sure looks like the Joker on the park bench.
Yep.
Just lots of like sort of deep philosophical statements being made back and forth. Bruce finally runs away once he finds out the city's being attacked by Mr. Bloom. And there's a nice little, I think, one splash page of ending where... Batman, well, Bruce looks like he wants to get back in the game. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love the ending is what really sold the book for me. I thought it was good up until that point at the ending, but then when I saw the ending, I was like, oh, this is really good. Mm. Because at first, you're not really sure what's going on. You see Alfred, and he's sitting in a dark room in Wayne Manor, and he's watching Mr. Bloom on television, and you just see the word balloons of a banging sound in
right,
the background.
Not sure what it is. I definitely did not expect that last page, that last splash page, because of the sound effect that that I'm presuming Snyder chose on purpose.
Because it's a bang, bang, bang.
Right, and it makes you think of gunshots.
Yeah, they've already had gunshots going off earlier in the issue, so you're thinking, like, maybe it's just chaos outside, everyone's going nuts, and Alfred's, like, reeling in horror, saying no, and whatever, and then finally he kicks the door in, and you see it's Bruce Wayne, and he's ready to go, he's ready to rumble, he's ready to get back into business, and that was the point where I just... Like, you know, I got done reading it, and I set it down, and I was just like, okay, deep breath, here we go.
Well, you know, what I liked about this issue is that there's definitely an escalation. I think that Capullo's art really sells the creepiness of the Mr. Bloom character and what he's capable of, the transformation of one of the children that the... at that center, you know, right before... well, I guess that might be the trigger. You know, it might be the trigger of what... causes Bruce to remember,
right?
You know, that very well might just be the inciting incident, the cause. You know, seeing that particular transformation.
Here's the other thing: is that we don't see what happened in that center.
Mm-hmm.
We just see the girl come in and her body starts to distort,
transform, right?
And we've got a kaboom sound effect, and then the next time we see Bruce, his face is bloody and his clothes are all ripped up. So we don't know, is he the only one who survived? Is it possible that this woman he was in love with, he was going to marry, is it possible that she didn't make it? And this is what finally drives him over the edge.
Right.
To go back, because now he doesn't have, you know, he was talking earlier about this new life that he has, this new
job.
He
finally found happiness, right?
Right, this woman that he loves, and now if she is gone, then there's no reason for him to stay in this life, and no reason not to go back to, and he has that need for vengeance again. It's not his parents that are dead, he doesn't remember that, but he's got this new tragedy in his life to focus on, so I wonder if that's their way of getting her out of the story.
Goodness. Well, at least they didn't stuff her into a refrigerator.
Yeah, that would have been cooler. But
ah,
yeah.
Oh, where's the sound effect?
All right.
Cool. I'm glad that you liked that. You know, like it was a nice. You know, we all know what's coming, right? Without spoiling too much, we all know what's coming in the next few issues. Is you know, it was kind of a nice. It was a nice lead up to you know the to what we know is coming. I appreciate that it wasn't. Sort of like it is what we expect, but it's done in a different way. It's done in a pretty dramatic way. So it you know it sells it very well to you know at least to me.
Yeah, I've only got one other DC book, so I'll jump down to that one. And that's Superman Wonder Woman 25.
I read this actually,
continuing the Savage Dawn storyline. And so at the end of the last issue, Superman and Wonder Woman fall from space back to Earth, and apparently Superman is not recovering from this. Is too much of a hit to his system since he's not Superman anymore, so he's not recovering from it. So she takes him to Olympus and takes him in front of her quote-unquote siblings, who are all a bunch of buttholes, apparently, and wants them to save him. And so most of the issue is it really feels like filler. It's each one of them giving him some sort of mental test while he's in this unconscious state of showing him what his life could be or other things he could accomplish if he, you know, gives up on being with Wonder Woman, if he goes somewhere else with his life, or even confronting him with his decision to not, you know, a couple issues ago we saw him pull out his grandma's ring that he was going to give her, and then he ends up putting it back, and, you know, whatever, they're confronting him with all this stuff, so it is more, I don't know, character beat stuff, but it just felt like a lot of stuff that could be one or two pages of conversation that was stretched out to an issue. But the ending, again, like Batman 48, the ending of this issue is what really sells it, is the next kink in the storyline. So, spoiler bell real quick. Give me a spoiler bell.
You got it.
They restore Superman back to health, but they make him fully mortal. So he is now completely human at the hands
of at least in this
gods.
Book. We'll see how long that lasts in the other books, right? that's what's so frustrating about like the way they're running the Superman like depowered state.
Yeah. Well, and it could be one of those things where they take him back to his base level so he can recharge, and then once he recharges, he's back to being Superman again. Which I could see, you know, being the outcome of the Savage Dawn storyline is that he recovers his powers and he's back to being regular Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Just like how they're wrapping up the whole Batman thing.
Right.
Yeah. Because they've learned those gimmicks don't go a year and a half like they did in the 90s.
Is that how long the lightning bolt Superman lasted?
Was it that long?
I was thinking more of Death of Superman and breaking Bruce Wayne's back when they did both of those.
Oh, yeah.
Superman Red and Blue was maybe about a year, yeah.
There wasn't double shipping and all that back then.
Yeah, well, yeah. Mm. But anyway, so overall, I mean, I like the twist at the end and what it throws into the overall Savage Dawn storyline, but this particular issue just felt like a lot of, like, oh my gosh, he's about to die, so let's spend 20 pages of walking through a dream and exploring our feelings. So, you know, I don't have feelings, I don't have emotions, so I couldn't really relate to this.
I didn't realize that we were coming off of an issue where Superman gets really messed up from re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, and you know I didn't bother to flip back to the previous issue to see what had happened. I was just sort of reading this for what it was, which was just I wouldn't say filler, but more because of the nature of this book being a study of their relationship as just being an in-depth study of their relationship as it stands now from the point of view of her Greek pantheon siblings. So, you know, these Greek gods or demigods are so confused as to why, you know, Wonder Woman would take up with Superman like this, that, you know, they're just sort of exploring and tweaking and teasing and poking and instigating, you know, this entire issue. And then when we get to the end, like you said, we reach this point where Supes is mortal. You know, we'll see how long that lasts and if it carries over into any of the other books, you know. But if you saw the tagline for the next issue, I believe they're teasing Kryptonite. And I wonder if that's just going to be another step towards Superman getting his powers back. All right?
All right.
Hmm.
Let's see. New Avengers number 5 is the start of a new story arc where we get to see the Avengers of 2 XXX, I think they're called, who made an appearance in Al Ewan's Avengers, Ultron Forever, I think the storyline was, that crossed over into New Avengers, Avengers, and I think Uncanny Avengers, one shots he wrote himself. So the big deal out of this is, in the previous arc, Wiccan was possessed by this magician, wizard, evildoer from a couple of universes before this universe.
Well, he's definitely not, I don't think it was a full possession, it's definitely more like a piece of this demiurge was left in Wiccan to kind of fester.
Yeah, and that's why he's becoming this
demiurge? Demiurge, I guess.
However you pronounce it.
Yeah.
That was the main takeaway from the issue. We saw some more stuff with the Maker, aka Ultimate Reed Richards. And I didn't notice this, but I saw in the Tom Brevoort interview that he's still talking in the uppercase and lowercase letters.
Oh, really?
No yeah. kidding.
And they actually recognized that in that interview?
Yep.
Well, if anyone would mention it, it would be Brevoort.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go
flip it. But he also said that since there is no Ultimate Universe anymore, that it's pretty much up to the, I guess, each book whether they want to use uppercase or lowercase letters.
He said,
if you look at Ms. Marvel, her book uses uppercase and lowercase. I think he pointed her out as an example of a book that chose to do both.
Unless it's not really the same Captain Marvel.
No, he said Ms. Marvel, so now I'm going to go look at that. Marvel. That might just be like a style choice for Ms. Marvel because of the way they do the the caption boxes are often lettered. You know, there's like a real stylistic font that they use for a lot of the setting of the caption boxes. So, but now I'm starting to notice that in the upper and lower case in Ms. Marvel. Wow, that's interesting. Okay. So I like this issue of the New Avengers.
I thought it was okay. It wasn't as fun as the previous issues had been for me. I guess I kind of enjoyed the whole Hulkling, Space Knight, Space King story.
Right. Well, you know what? I appreciate this issue for kind of raising the stakes a little bit. You know, kind of moving the story along and creating the point where there's going to be some real conflict. We have the future Avengers coming back in time due to a funny little quirk in the visual acuity of squirrels. Did you pick up on that, Tim, when you were reading this? Did you look at the panel carefully?
Which one?
When they're talking about squirrels being colorblind?
Yeah, or whatever the squirrel's name is using just the red and green cords.
Right, and the red and the green, and just because two cords are or two plugs are misplaced or misset, you know, causes this whole ripple in the time stream. You know, they're working on a time machine that would put Dr. Doom's time machine to shame, and the fact that they've got a squirrel plugging in, you know, essential equipment. And, you know, I flipped to the next page, not realizing what was wrong with the previous page. And, you know, they talk, and Squirrel Girl happens to mention, oh, by the way, squirrels are colorblind. I'm like, what difference does that make? I flip back and I laugh because they actually do, you know, make it very evident. And if you're not paying attention to the coloring, it won't appear right away. So I thought that was a nice little touch.
We talked about Ms. Marvel earlier, so we can jump to that if you'd like.
Sure.
This was the end of the arc where Hydra in disguise is sort of trying to
invade and gentrify
the Jersey City by using propaganda with Ms. Marvel's image on it. And they're also, of course, mind-controlling citizens of Jersey City with the product that they drink. And so Ms. Marvel has to team up. Well, and her best friend Bruno is also
mind controlled.
So it takes the help of her Bruno's current girlfriend and Ms. Marvel to stop them, which they do. But then that still doesn't change people's perceptions of her, because as someone says, where there's smoke, there's fire. So she must have had something to do with this evil organization using her image.
Right. There's a lot of subtle hints and digs at, you know, the current state of just the world in this issue. One of the funny things that the protesters, you know, there's a group of protesters that appears to protest the gentrification and this company kind of buying out Jersey City and remodeling it in its own, you know, in this new image. One of the protesters yells out, "Full transparency! Release your financial records!" I kind of got a chuckle out of that. And G. Willow Wilson takes a dig at one of my old neighborhoods in Brooklyn, Park Slope, in the panel before that, talking about the effects of gentrification and what that does to the population that was in place before. People decide that it's a cool place to live and move in and raise rents and just kind of push out people who they feel may be quote unquote undesirable. So, I like this issue. I like this book. I like that this first arc is a mix of the personal, the new status quo of Bruno and his new girlfriend, Kamala Khan obviously being a member of an Avengers team now, an official Avenger, and mixing that with something that does speak to some of the social issues that are affecting a lot of us today, especially in those of us who live in or around cities. So, you know, again, this is always one of the strong candidates for a click of the week for me. I like this issue. It's a nice topper to the first three-issue arc of the series. The art by Takeshi Miyazawa is great, always complimentary to Adrian Alfona's art. You know, I love the fact that these two artists, they're not interchangeable, but they basically help make the transition from issue to issue when they take turns be very seamless. So I give G. Willow Wilson and the entire team on Ms. Marvel a lot of credit. I enjoyed this. It made you think, and it still carried the story forward. There's a lot of just real kind of touching and great moments in this. So again, I can't recommend this series enough to anyone who's reading comics nowadays and anyone who's interested in starting to read comics. So it doesn't get much more of a ringing endorsement than that. Anybody else read this?
Well, I already did my spiel on it, so.
No, I mean, I was talking to Doug. You know, like anybody?
No.
All right.
Doug, you're anybody.
I have no interest. I really don't.
Really?
I've never read anything from G. Willow Wilson that made me think I wanted to read more.
Oh, that's too bad. You really should read it.
Yeah.
All right. Did anybody read? Oh. You know what's funny? I want to throw something out here. The Uncanny Inhumans, number 4.
Uh-oh.
Okay. All right. What didn't you like about this? Because I actually enjoyed the finale of this story.
The finale was the best part of the whole story arc.
Exactly.
But it still just kind of ended and was just like, eh. I mean, they outwitted Kang.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got to see Uhura do something because I had never even heard or known about this kid's existence until the Uncanny Inhumans number 0 issue came out last year.
Right.
It was just like, yay, we beat Kang. Let's go home.
I like the finale, and I think that's the strongest part. What I didn't like about this is that it took 4 issues to tell the story, and I think the middle 2 issues were very tough to get through. So, you know, I don't know if Soul could have kind of condensed this into 3 issues and made it a little bit easier to read, because it felt like by the time we got to the end, which to me was satisfying, and like you said, it was the first time we see Uhura really exercise a lot of his power, you know, and see the full extent of it and how scary it is. You know, by the time we get there, we're exhausted and just happy to finally get to the end of this particular story arc. So I feel like this possibly could have been done in 3 issues and we could have gotten the payoff a little bit sooner. You know, I think the big reveal that Uhura had been manipulated by Kang to become a future version of Kang was, you know, could have been done in a middle issue. It didn't have to take the, you know, 2 issues to tell that particular aspect of the story. So, you know, like I said, I'm happy that we finally got to the end of the story. I'm satisfied with the conclusion, although I'm inclined to agree with you. That last panel where it's like, let's go home, felt kind of empty. It's like, how, you know, so what do you mean, let's go home? I guess, you know, we'll find out what happens next. What they're teasing now is a callback to the Secret Wars miniseries, because they're going to talk about the Quiet Room. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the next issue. But, you know, all in all, I like the conclusion to the story arc. I just didn't like the execution of the story as a whole.
Okay, so you're more on my side.
Yeah. I definitely, you know, I definitely wanted to talk about how I thought the ending was satisfying, but I'm not I wasn't a fan of the story as a whole.
Definitely enjoying All New Inhumans
more. Yeah. I'm glad that this bit with Kang is over.
So Black Bolt gave Uhura over to the Kang to save him from Attilan being blown up?
If I recall, yeah.
Or Adelan, as they say in the on the cartoons. It's Adelan.
So oh, is it Adelan?
Yeah.
No kidding.
On one of the Disney XD shows, that's what they pronounced it as. I was like, whoa, that's how you say it?
Well, thanks for the guidance, Marvel.
It's so Dark Side, not Dark Sea. It's Dark Side. Side.
Okay. So Adelan, right? So is that the last time we saw Uhura? Was when I guess he had been exposed to the Terrigen Mists just before the fall of Adelan, you know, when Black Bolt basically blows everything up, and that's when he gives him the Kang?
Well, we never actually saw him. The only time we saw him give Uhura over was in Uncanny Inhumans 0.
Hmm. I couldn't recall. I'm going to have to go back and dig that out and see how that happened. But I guess that was the seed for this particular opening story.
But yeah, it's just they portray Black Bolt as this like master tactician, and it's like, how can he be telling people what to do and he can't talk to anyone?
Well, you know, there's always, you know, winks and nods and, you know, that look that he gives people. So, you know, it used to be that Medusa was the one that basically spoke for him, but now that they're not, you know, they're not exactly getting along, it makes things it puts a lot of the burden on the artist, in this case McNiven. I like McNiven's art in this, actually. So it's pretty good. You know, to really express what Black Bolt might be thinking.
Yeah.
Does McNiven ever have bad art? I mean,
there's times when it looks rushed. There's definitely times when it looks rushed. It didn't seem like this issue had that quality. It definitely felt like he had put a lot of work into it, and the coloring definitely. Jay Leeson, is it Jay Leeson on inks or Peaks. Jay Leeson on color? Okay, it's Sonny Goh on color. The color really does help the art and enhances it in this issue.
All right, feel free to pitch.
Did anybody ever read Silver Surfer?
Did they do two hip hop covers for that?
They did, because of Drake.
Cause I saw both of them.
Oh wait, hold on. I'm holding up the Captain Marvel by accident. My bad. Here we go. Or is it supposed to be like this?
Yeah. I was like, oh, there's two of them.
Yeah. For the two Drake covers. So, you know, I'm no fan of Drake. You know, send all hate mail to @agent_70 on Twitter. I am not a fan of Drake. But, you know, the covers are pretty cool.
So fill us in on this Silver Surfer new volume.
So,
isn't it basically just a continuation of the old
one? It definitely is a continuation. Thank you, Dirt, for leading this off. It is a continuation. The creative team is unchanged. It is Dan Slott, Mike Allred, and Laura Allred putting this issue together. It is the continuing saga of the Silver Surfer and Dawn Greenwood. But now they're on their way back to Earth. And they basically, you know, come back to Earth after they're jaunt in space and helping to recreate creation, you know, recreate the universe sort of at the end of the last volume. And their first adventure is combating aliens called the Hordax, who are not from Eternia.
Oh man, I was about to get real excited for this book.
Basically, what they do, what they're doing was stealing Earth ideas and culture and art, and you know, as funny as that sounds, you know, it seemed like a cool little twist to what they had threatened, which is we're going to steal your most valuable resource, and obviously Dan Slott put a little twist to that. One of the cool things that we see here is Mike Allred gets to sneak in a couple of Mad Men references into the into the book, so you know that's pretty cool. And there's a hint of what's to come, that there's a greater threat to come, in that the Hordax are basically, we're basically looking to archive the arts and the creative ideas of the human race, because something else is coming. Where's the drama? That could threaten the continuing existence of the Earth. So we'll see where that is. And we have a hint of the appearance of the ever-loving blue-eyed thing in the next issue. He is on the cover. He does appear in this issue at the end, although he may not be in full control of his facilities. We'll leave it at that. So, you know, all in all, this is a continuation. If you're a fan of the previous volumes of The Silver Surfer by Dan Slott and the Allreds, then by all means pick this up. I'm sort of on the fence in terms of continuing to pull this as a physical book and continuing to add it to my personal collection. But I'm definitely going to continue reading it. It's just a matter of whether or not I want to continue picking it up. I'm still sort of on the fence. It's definitely, I can't say it's on the chopping block because I've only just picked up the first issue. I'm not sure if I'm going to pick up the series going forward, though.
Well, I can segue that into a book that's on my chopping block, which is Deadpool.
Finally. Because
Deadpool 6 sucked.
Wow.
There was, like, almost no humor in the entire thing, which, for a Deadpool book, is a really bad move.
That's amazing.
They throw in a...
And with Duggan, too, on scripts, that's really interesting.
It's been light on humor the last couple issues, and in this one, there's a little bit they... steal some jokes from Idiocracy, if you've seen the Mike Judge movie.
I haven't, but I've heard so many bad things.
No. The movie itself is actually pretty good.
Okay.
You got to watch the movie at least once. I think you'd enjoy it. But the movie is definitely over the top. I mean, you got to be prepared for going outside the bounds of reality. But
okay.
Regardless, they steal some jokes from that at the beginning of this book, but then the rest of the book is just flat. It's just this female Deadpool in the future who's fighting against the man, the law, the corporate hogs, whatever. And old man Deadpool is, you know, in her house, and he's kind of the crotchety old man invalid thing, and it just never goes anywhere. It never gets interesting. The Spider-Man Deadpool was 100,000 times funnier than what's going on in the regular Deadpool book right now. So
it's because it doesn't have any foils to kind of bounce off of, you know, any comic foils or at least counterparts. No straight man.
Maybe the voice in his head is gone, so maybe that's something to do with it. But
possibly.
It's just, you know, the old days of the Deadpool book, you would have these issues where, like, he knows that Domino is coming for him and she's going to be slinking around on the roof. So he cooks pancakes for, like, 12 hours and fills up the swimming pool with pancakes so that when she slips and falls on the roof on his trap and comes crashing through the skylight, she lands in the pool full of pancakes because why not? It's funny. And you don't get any of that outlandish type weird stuff. You get a couple wisecracks here and there, and that's it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I miss the crazy hijinks and antics that he used to have. And he, yeah, maybe because there is no straight man to play off of. There's no one there to set up jokes for him to throw in the punchline. But it's just I just got done with this issue, and I was like, why am I reading this anymore? Like, it's just, the last couple haven't, it started out strong. The first one had a lot of humor in it.
Yeah.
The second one had some humor in it, and then the third one was just not really funny. Fourth, fifth, sixth, now we get into six, and it's
not even. I can't believe we're up to the sixth issue on this volume of Deadpool.
Yeah, and it's not a humor book anymore. It's more like just a regular comic that has some funny stuff thrown in the beginning, and that's it, you know?
Well, now I have a question for you. Do you think it's because the Deadpool brand has become very diversified or even watered down because there are all these various Deadpool books out? We didn't mention it earlier in the news, but I tweeted out a link this morning about Comic Book Resources put together an updated collection of all the hip-hop covers that Marvel is putting out, and I noticed that, and it was a reminder, really, that there's another Deadpool book coming out. It was like Deadpool and the Mercs or something like that.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, now we have Deadpool and Spider-Man, we have Deadpool and the Mercs. Do you think maybe they're trying to, much like they did with the Avengers and even with Spider-Man, kind of keep the books kind of tones?
That shouldn't have any impact on the humor. I mean, it would just be a different type of humor from a different writer. You could have a dozen comedians writing a dozen Deadpool books, and they would all
be different, right?
It's just one would be more toilet humor, and one would be more about puns, and one would be, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Just the style of humor. Like, this just didn't have humor. Spider-Man Deadpool 1, I remember laughing out loud at some of the stuff that happened
right.
in the book. And this one, there was just no joy in it. There was no happiness. I got to the end of it, and it's like when you sit down at a buffet, and you're like, oh, I'm going to eat all this stuff, and then you get done eating it, and you're just like, oh, what the heck did I do? Like, now I feel bad because I ate all this garbage. Like, that's how
I ate all the bread when I should have been eating.
It's like I got to the end of this Deadpool, and it's like, why am I, you know?
Yeah.
Started out strong, but at this point, like, I should have known, you know, 2-3 issues ago, I should have jumped off at the end of the last issue, which was the end of that arc.
Gotcha.
Why did I even pick this one up? Maybe because I'm just a sucker for 2099 references, but like the fact that it's a 2099 reference, I think, is supposed to be the joke, and that's a joke that's gone in a snap, you know?
I like that the cover looks like the 2099 covers.
Yeah,
yeah, it looks like the fake foil embossing.
Yeah, I dig.
Actually,
right there.
I tell you what, I'm gonna flip over here. See this Captain Marvel variant? There's more humor in this Captain Marvel variant cover of Deadpool making fun of the ancient alien guys on the History Channel than there is in that entire issue of Deadpool 6.
Wow.
So,
wow. Do you have the alternate cover for Uncanny Inhumans, the Deadpool cover?
Yeah.
There's a Keep Calm and
Keep
there
Calm
it is.
And Kerrigan.
Goodness, I kind of swore at myself for laughing at that one.
Yeah, but this book, I'll pick up the next one and flip through it, but there's a very good chance it won't be actually going into my physical pile.
I gotcha. Understood. All right. Did anyone read staying in the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe? Anyone read Uncanny X-Men number 2?
I did.
All right. So, what do you think about the second issue of this X-Men book that doesn't necessarily feel like an X-Men book?
Well, it's definitely an X-Force book and disguised as a X-Men book. The story focuses more on Sabretooth and
Monet
searching for healers because they've noticed a pattern of healers being targeted and executed. So they search out and find Elixir from, I guess, what, Young X-Men or whatever teen X-Men book he was from back in the day.
Right.
Dark Riders show up, bad things happen.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. This issue went by in a flash.
Yeah, which is fine. Yeah. Like I said, like to go back to earlier reference, it was just a big week of, yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, you know, it was, you know, I'm not a fan of this, and I had joked about this being the true interruption in my Uncanny X-Men collection. Now I've got two issues of this in hand. I'm not sure I want to read the third, to be honest. I really don't find myself. I'm not at all intrigued by where the story is going. The Dark Riders, weren't those was that a Sinister thing, or was that
that was Apocalypse's first or second group after the Four Horsemen?
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I don't care. It's pretty lame.
I guess we learned that they're doing this stuff to get the attention of the Clan Kaaba to get on their radar.
Right. I guess because Apocalypse is going to get another big storyline, they want to they're going to tie this book into that somehow.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, you know, listen, it's, you know, the X books have been like this now, you know, as they try to launch these satellite X books. I hate to call, you know, something that's titled Uncanny X-Men a satellite X book, but it is now, with Extraordinary X-Men being sort of the main title, the flagship title, you know, trying to, you know, pluck different, different characters from the various X books, you know, and slapping them together to try to create some sort of tension in the team. You know, and create you know, different interpersonal relationships that we can see develop and conflicts grow out of them. You know, we're still not 100% sure how or why all these characters are going to be really working together, except for under Magneto's guidance. And it's not, you know, I you can sense my frustration because I'm just not convinced that this is going to tell any sort of cohesive story. And you know, at the end of the day. So, again, chopping block.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. Did anyone read Astonishing Ant-Man this week?
No.
No?
You know, I haven't, but I haven't read it since it relaunched after Secret Wars, but I want to. I just haven't had that chance to sit down and get to it.
Right. It's a good issue. Nothing earth-shattering. There's a lot of developments in Scott Lang's personal life. I'll put it at that. You know, there's still a lot of things going on with that henchman app, you know, that's right on the cover. I'm not really spoiling anything. And, you know, it's, I guess to continue this week's theme of, that's what this issue was, another, you know, it wasn't bad, it wasn't great, it was just, you know, it was there, it helps move the story along, but nothing to write home about.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, what else?
I think PCN Dirt and myself only have probably like one more book to go through.
Yeah.
That's our surprise book.
Yeah.
Plus Ultra number one from Overground Comics, which, you know, this is one of those books that I will admit the artwork is what made me pay a little more attention to it than I probably should have, than I normally would have. The art on the cover is the art on the inside. It is very clean, very nice looking. Very well done. It's from a brand new company, a bunch of guys trying to put books together. And from what I understand, they have, I think, four books out now, and all books are a shared universe. And all of the books, they move in real time, so to speak, whereas the characters will get old. They say that, you know, if a character dies, they're dead forever. You know, if something bad happens, if someone, you know, gets their hand cut off, it'll always be cut off. There's no, you know, alien regeneration pill, whatever. These are you know, supposedly more real stories.
Grounded.
With characters. Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. But this particular book was actually pretty interesting because the character, Plus Ultra, who's this female character, she is a female superhero in this world, but because she's attractive, she has to market herself as being the hot one. So she has to do the photo shoots for the magazine cover, and she's wearing a costume that is not really meant to fight in. It's just meant to look pretty for the cameras. Mm-hmm. And so when an actual battle breaks out, she goes into battle wearing this costume, and she's constantly, like, you know, tugging to keep her breast covered by it because it keeps her fall down because it's not a real costume. And she's constantly in her mind having this dialogue about, you know, she wanted to be famous, she wanted to be powerful, she wanted to be a superhero, but now here she is, and it kind of sucks because everyone takes her for granted, and everyone, they're more interested in how she looks than what she actually does as a hero. And, you know, if something goes wrong, 9,000 people are going to take pictures of it and post it on Twitter, but she does one thing right and nobody says thank you. You know, dealing with all those types of issues of the superhero world. So I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I thought it was really good, especially for a book that technically came out of nowhere. The artwork was really good. The story was good. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed the writing style of it. It was wordy in parts, but it was sort of more conversational, so it didn't feel like you were sludging through.
Yeah, you didn't feel bogged down by it.
Yeah, and I actually enjoyed the interaction between Plus Ultra and Motsi, I believe her name was. That was some good dialogue.
Yeah, it's like there's a certain level of respect that Moxie has for Ultra because she's, you know, the big-time superhero, and being able to fight her is, you know, it's kind of cool that you get to go up against the big hero. But then at the same time, it's like you got to look out for yourself, and even if it's going to make her look bad, you still got to do it because at the end of the day, you got to look out for, you know, number one.
Right.
But she's still kind of in awe of this superheroine that has come to, you know, beat her up and try to take her in, which I thought was a fun play on the situation.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm glad you guys liked it. I guess I'm going to have to open that up and take a look at it.
Well, and like I said, it's a shared universe. So she talks about Hero Corp is the company that gave her her powers. Mm-hmm. And there's another book that came out this week called Hero Corp Knights, which I guess is about the company.
Okay.
So if you want to see what's actually happening at the company, the people who run it, and kind of their shady operations, that's out. They gave us also a copy of Graduate Number 2, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I hope to get to before the weekend's over. That's another book set in the universe of somebody who gets powers. And then there's a fourth book called Absent Captain, which I haven't read. I don't know anything about, but those are the four books they have out right now. They're all part of that shared universe. So, you know, we hear, like, Aftershock is the big company that came out of nowhere right now. It has a bunch of books out. They got all the top creators from Marvel and DC and Image to, you know, do stories and artwork on, and they're making this big push. But I don't know. This little company, it's got something to it, so I'm going to have to check out the rest of their books because I definitely enjoyed this one a lot.
Okay. All right, cool. Cool. I got a question for you guys before we wrap up tonight's show. Do you think we're suffering from post-Secret Wars letdown? It's kind of like we don't have a big event to talk about this week. I mean, I think the books this week were kind of like we were talking about before, just kind of, you know, you know, other than a couple of highlights, you know, we'll get to those when we do our clicks of the week, but do you think we're suffering from like a post-Secret Wars hangover?
I don't think so. I think it's more of some books, this week books, at least on the Marvel side, books either ended their arc or just started their second arc. Mm-hmm. So it depends on how the first arc ended and how the first arc began. And at least for the ones I read this week, minus Captain Marvel, everything either ended kind of just or started just
Yeah, I don't, because if I look at the books that came out last week, which was, am I looking at 2 weeks ago? What week is this?
We're 152.
Okay, so 151, if I look at Sheriff of Babylon, that was great. Action Comics was actually pretty good. Rocket and Groot was interesting. Dark Knight 3 number 2 was a good book. Grim Fairy Tales was another book that was a lot better than I expected. Justice League 47 was really good. Last Contract was really good. Web Warriors was really good. Spider-Man Deadpool was really good. And I really like Swamp Thing. So if I look at all of those books on my list from last week, they were all really good books.
Okay.
Like, I really enjoyed all of those books that came out last week. If I look at this week's list of books, I'm looking at a lot of books that were like, nah, they were okay. But,
yeah.
You know, one or two pretty good, but the rest were just kind of there. And so, yeah, I think it's just an off week in the stuff that came out, yeah.
Yeah, I, you know, because my personal feeling was that I think I'm definitely suffering from a little bit of a Secret Wars hangover. You know, the excitement of finally getting to issue number 9, you know, was there with us last week, too, so...
All right. Clicks of the week.
Simple for me. Ms. Marvel number 3. And it looks like Roddy Cat is seconding that.
And once again, the Comp Chronicles is split down the middle.
Yeah, because I'm going to pick Batman 48 as my click of the week.
As will I.
Nice.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice. No drama. Just applause. That's cool.
Yeah, so we like Batman and Ms. Marvel here at the Comic Chronicles. All right, I guess that'll about do it for tonight's episode. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Comic Chronicles, of course.
Yay!
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at NewsNerdsNeed. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt on Twitter. And go to popculturenetwork.com.
Yay!
And with that, we'll be back next week for another exciting episode of Comic Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Peace!